You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 2nd of October, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, of course, because it's SS Britannia. I have my regular co-host with me, Brutus of Troy, also known as Subar. Brutus, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you very much.
Excellent, excellent. And we've got lots of interesting topics to get through today. I really don't know where to start. I guess we should really start with some news from Britain that most people are probably aware of. National Action are in the news again, never mind the fact that they don't actually exist and they disbanded as soon as they were designated as a terrorist organisation. But what the authorities have done, they've arrested 11 people, they've released 6 of them, and they're accusing them of being members of National Action. And they've also banned a group called Scottish Dawn and another group called NS131. And what they're doing is they're saying that both these groups are just aliases for National Action. And I really don't understand how they can do this, because Scottish Dawn have been going for about 2 years now. They're nothing to do with National Action. They're completely different. And looking at what's actually been written about them, it seems to be because both of these groups have got pretty slick propaganda. They've got some quite impressive graphics that they're using. They're saying that because they're impressive, that they must be National Action because they're so good at their propaganda. It must be the same people involved. And they haven't actually charged any of these people with any real crimes. They've charged them with possession of terrorist documents, which means possession, which could just be having on your hard drive a copy of the National Action game plan. They had a game plan for 2014, 2015, 2016. If you just have one of those documents, that could be classed as a terrorist document, possessing it. Preparing for terrorist acts, that could be having a load of stickers, preparing to go out and put stickers up. And it seems to be that because National Action, some of the things they were saying is we must take our country back, Britain for the British, these sort of things, these sort of slogans that every nationalist would say, even Hitler was right. I think that the police are trying to link these slogans with them, just things that normal nationalists say, because they were, National Action also said them, they're trying to link that with them as well. So the fact is that these people that have been arrested, none of them have committed any violent crimes whatsoever. Nobody in Scottish Dawn has. If they had actually committed any crimes, then they would be arresting them for them. But they obviously haven't, so they've had to come up with this. Basically, it's a scam, accusing them of being terrorists, because they've got no other way to deal with it. And it really is just repression of legitimate political consent, peaceful protest groups, young lads that want to defend their country and take an interest in politics are just being shut down. And they're also showing pictures of them at these camps that they go on. And obviously, young lads, they go to a camp, they practice boxing, they spar between one another, they learn self-defense. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And they say, well, we're doing this because we know that there's a civil war coming. I mean, everybody knows there is a civil war coming. There is a race war coming around the corner. That's just inevitable with all the multiculturalism that we're being forced to endure. So they're preparing for that. And what the state are saying is that because they're preparing for that, they're trying to ignite one. Because they say there's going to be a race war, apparently that means that they're trying to ignite a war, basically, just by preparing for it. So really, it's just double language or double thinking, I guess you could call it, like they have a double think like they have in 1984, trying to shut down basic political dissent. But it's absolutely disgusting what's going on anyway. At least 6 of them have been released. But National Action never even had a membership list. So how they're going to prove in court that these group, these people are actually members of National Action, I don't know. And conversely, I don't know how they're going to prove that they're not, the actual people in the dock. How are they going to say, well, we're not members of National Action, because there is no list to prove that they aren't members. So it's a very strange situation. Anne-Marie Waters has commented on it. I think Katie Hopkins has commented on this as well. And judging by the comment sections, people are saying, well, hang on a minute, these guys haven't actually committed any terrorist acts. And Amber Rudd, when asked why Scottish Dawn have been banned, she just repeated the same nonsense she said about National Action. Oh, they're homophobic, virulently anti-Semitic, they're racist. So basically they're saying that anyone that has the same views that our grandfathers had about race and about homosexuals are now terrorists. So I don't think they're going to be arresting lots of OAPs for this, for their views, and policing their thoughts, but they're certainly policing our young men in Britain at the moment. It's a terrible state of affairs. Brutus, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it's awful. We are very much living in a Soviet state, or what's the word that people like to say? An anarcho-tyranny, isn't it? Anarchy on the streets. London is the acid attack capital of the world. Terrorist attacks every week. You know, black people, Muslims, raping up and down the country. But if you complain about it, you get sent to jail. It is an anarcho-tyranny. There's no other word for it. Interestingly enough, I think that the Soviet Union was like this as well. I mean, I think it was Jonathan Bowden who said this. He was talking about that novel, A Clockwork Orange. And he said the author, he got his inspiration from Moscow, actually. And he went there and it was just, you know, chaos and disorder. People have the impression that the Soviet Union was like very ordered because, you know, obviously it was a totalitarian government, but it's not true at all. There was crime on the streets. It was awful. The government was just there to enforce, you know, thought crimes, just to stop people from, you know, dissenting against the system. And it's exactly the same system that we have in this country, unfortunately. You know, if you're a criminal and you like to rob people, Peter Hitchens goes on about this all the time. It's like practically impossible to get into jail. It's very easy. Actually, I was reading him today in the Daily Mail, and he says you can do, he was talking about that story of that, that girl, this blonde girl who was going to Oxford University, and she stabbed her boyfriend with a knife. And, you know, everybody knows that she's done it. It's proved. But the judge said, oh, well, you know, I don't want to waste your intelligence. And they just let her off, you know. And Hitchens was saying, you know, you can go and Google it. People that get away with knife crime, and a long, 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 long list of crimes will appear showing, you know, different savage and violent acts that take place in this country. But yet these people are not punished for it. And then you know, you've got National Action. What do? They stick up some stickers and they're all getting thrown in jail. I mean, it's just madness. It's madness. And we do live in a Soviet state. There's no other word for it. In fact, I would say that the Soviet state was better than ours, because at least that was it was white. Unfortunately, we live in something a lot worse. We live in a Soviet state plus homosexuality and plus an Islamic invasion. I mean, at least the Soviet state was nationalistic in a way.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point there by drawing a parallel with the Soviet state, because they had literature which was banned as well there. You could be prosecuted for possession of literature, which is what's happened to these lads. They're being prosecuted for possession of literature. And in the USSR, they had certain banned books. One of them was 200 Years, I believe. I forget. Solzhenitsyn, that's his name. Solzhenitsyn, that was one of the banned books. Constantin Poupier, rest in peace.
200 Years Together.
Yeah, that's it. Constantin Poupier, he managed to get hold of this book, and he'd been... he'd believed the lies, the Soviet lies, all his life, and he managed to get hold of that book and realized that everything he'd been taught was a lie. And he formed a book group at his university, and one of his friends that was at this book group, he'd been a friend for life. He was his best man at his wedding. He turned out to be a KGB spy. What was going on at the time was Glasnost, and because of that, he wasn't sent to the Gulag, but he would have been sent to the Gulag if it had been a couple of years before, just for possessing this literature and reading it. And this is the state that we're in Britain now. You can be prosecuted for possession of reading National Action literature. That's how bad that it's got. So I think it's important that you draw these parallels, because people just don't realize it. And you're right about the people being let off for violent crimes. And soon our prisons are just going to be filled with political dissidents. I mean, we've been saying for a long time now about the revisionists and the revisionist historians that are unjustly being sent to prison for questioning the World War II narrative. But now we've got people being accused of terrorism just for not agreeing with immigration, for pointing out the fact that it's Jews behind a lot of our problems. And they're basically saying you're not allowed to have freedom of thought anymore. You're not allowed to discuss these things with people. And it wasn't just that the Soviet state was white. In the Soviet state, you knew what it was that you weren't allowed to do. I mean, we're told we have freedom of speech here. We're told that so long as you are not inciting violence against any particular minorities, you can say what you wish to say. But that's all that National Action did. A lot of what they did was telling jokes. And this Scottish Dawn group, there's nothing at all that contravenes any laws on their side. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, they say they're a patriotic group. They want to defend Scotland. There's no inflammatory language on there. So they've clearly tried to keep within the law, and yet they're still being accused of being terrorists. So, you know, in that way, it's even worse, because at least they knew back then in Russia what it was that they were not allowed to do. We don't. They just make it up as they go along.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really bad situation. Of course, we still do have to keep meeting out. I actually wrote an article about this on my blog, suggesting that we have like a three-step action plan towards political activity. But having said this, I don't know if we can do the third step in this country. But anyway, I was making the point because a lot of people are talking about how to, you know, get the alt-right off the internet and into the real world. And I was making the point that you kind of need a stepping stone, a kind of social, informal social meetup first before you get guys to go out in the street and protest and things like this. So the idea being, the first step is you meet people on the internet, you get, you know, radicalized by the internet, you read stuff on the internet, you learn about white nationalism, et cetera, on the internet. The second step being the casual, informal, no pressure kind of meeting, kind of like, what the London Forum has in London, where they have that, casual drinking session every week. That was very good. I enjoyed that a lot. Met a lot of very, very intelligent people, and it really impressed me. I was like, wow, these white nationalists are really smart, you know, and it's really good to talk to people that are intelligent. So that should be the second step, in my opinion, just an informal gathering. And from that, once you've got that base of friendship, then you can go on the third step and do things like, you know, going out in the streets and protesting and things like that. Because most people aren't, you can't just jump from internet to, you know, doing what National Action did. So, but, you know, having said that, maybe the third step is just becoming increasingly impossible in this country. I don't know. Or maybe you can do it, but you just have to not give yourself a name or I don't know. I really don't know. But, that there has to be, first of all, the second step needs to be there. We still need to meet up in real life, in physical life, and, make friendships with each other and talk about stuff. You can't just, you know, be on the internet and be all like pent up and et cetera, et cetera. Human beings need to be social. Perhaps, I don't know, perhaps that kind of protest is just not possible anymore. I really don't know.
We need a multi-pronged approach, I guess. I mean, this is what we talked about for a while, isn't it? We need people online in your comment sections. We need people protesting, flash protests. We need a political wing, people that are doing things politically. And we've had a bit of a disappointment as well with the political side of things, with Anne-Marie Walters losing at the UKIP Leadership Challenge. I was really, really disappointed in that. And I was disappointed to hear people that supposedly nationalists that were running her down. I mean, okay, she's a lesbian. We know this. She's not racial, but she is really good on the Islamification of Britain. She's really good on the anti-immigration thing. She stands up for the white girls that have been abused by the Muslims. We've got far more in common with her than we don't have in common with her. And she was the only person in the political sphere that stood any chance of being voted in. So I was very disappointed to hear people on our side running her down. What should have been happening is we should have been saying to people, go out and become a member of UKIP so you can vote for her. But I think they even stitched her up on that and wouldn't allow new people, new members to actually vote for her. And also, there were Euro MPs, all the Euro MPs from Europe, from UKIP rather, said that if Anne-Marie Walters was voted in, that they were going to leave. So the members were actually blackmailed with that. But she was the only political voice that we've got that stood any chance of being elected or leading a mainstream party. As far as I can see it, UKIP are a dead duck now. They're done. They're finished with. Their new person that got voted in, Henry Bolton, that nobody's ever heard of, Nigel Farage backed him. Nigel Farage has been saying, oh, UKIP narrowly missed becoming a racist party. Anne-Marie Walters isn't a racist. She's against Islam. If she was a racist, that would be fantastic. But she isn't. We can't win everything. But it was good enough that she was anti-Islam. This Henry Bolton says that he's going to concentrate on Brexit. He's going to try and force Theresa May to leave the EU earlier than she plans. But it's already been done. We've already had the Brexit vote. 17 million people already voted to leave the EU. UKIP has to rebrand itself and find something else to concentrate on. And the anti-Islamification of Britain is what it should have been concentrating on. And they would have got masses of support if they were to actually do that. We know this just from when Donald Trump said that he was going to ban Muslims in America. There was masses of support for that in Britain. I think it was 70% of people polled said that they supported this. You talk to these boomers, they all don't know what's going on with the Islamification of Britain. They don't know why Theresa May is bowing down to them, why Labour are giving in to them, why everyone is being politically correct. They just don't understand it. And most of them will never, ever contemplate that it's Jews behind it. But most of them are now waking up to the fact that Islam is a threat and a serious problem, and it is a threat to our society, and it's not the nationalists causing these problems, it's the Muslims. And all they need is a figurehead. All they need is one political party to say that they stand against Islam, and they would get masses of support. And UKIP would have had a chance, I think, again, of actually getting into government and having a say. But they're certainly not going to, if all they're going to do is talk about leaving the EU, something which we've already said we're going to do. They're just spent, really. I mean, United Kingdom Independence Party, well, we voted for independence. That's it. It's finished. You know, they had to become something else. And I really thought Anne-Marie was going to win. So I did find that a real disappointment that she didn't. And she pointed out on her Twitter feed that Scottish Dawn had been banned, and she's saying this is just a way to stifle political dissent. She's being called a Nazi. We're all being called Nazis. I don't mind being called a Nazi because I am a Nazi, but plenty of people like her, you know, they don't subscribe to National Socialist ideology, but they're being called it anyway. And I think we've got probably got more sympathy from her than we get from Tommy Robinson. So I was a little bit annoyed to see that people were attacking her and trying to say she was an SJW and she's a feminist and all these things. You know, I think we should concentrate on the good points of people that are sort of on our side and standing up for us, especially if they've got a chance to be voted in. So we lost out big time there, I think, Brutus, politically.
Yeah. The thing is, the thing is that we really have to be intelligent about these things. We can't expect another Hitler to just rise up waving the swastika and to get elected. I mean, we've just talked about National Action getting banned. Unfortunately, we don't live in a country where we're able to speak the truth. So if you're not able to take the direct route, you have to take a roundabout route. And that means, you know, playing things like a spectrum. And that means keeping your eye on the Overton window and gradually pushing it to the right. And what Anne-Marie Waters would have done is she would have pushed the spectrum to the right. She would have transformed UKIP into an anti-jihad party, which is a great step. And you can complain, oh, she's a lesbian. Well, I'm not exactly happy about that either. But UKIP, as it stands, is not an anti-gay party, right? It's a pro-gay party already. So what difference does it make? I mean, okay, yeah, it's the figurehead, et cetera. But it would have been a step in the right direction. And homosexuality is obviously the lesser of two evils. It is a perversion and it is dangerous to society, but it's not as dangerous as being conquered by Islam and the mass, you know, miscegenation which Islam will cause to us. So, yeah, it was dumb. It was dumb not to have supported her, and I am also very upset, and I'm just generally upset with the lack of organization in the British alt-right and how people didn't get together and get organized with it. I mean, me and you, Sven, we were talking about the votes and that guy, I think he's an ex-Liberal Democrat, I just read. I mean, this flipping guy that got elected, he got something like 3,500 votes and Anne-Marie Waters got 2,500 votes, something like this. So if the British alt-right had been more organized, and if we'd have said, okay, guys, join UKIP, okay, we're going to co-opt this party, and we'd have had 1,000 or 2,000 people, young people with no previous political affiliations, joining UKIP, they could have just sat in the party, kept their mouth shut, not said anything. When it's time to vote, we could have swung the vote, and we could have had her in power, and we would have had a proper counter-jihad party in the UK. And that would have been amazing. That would have been Anne-Marie Waters can say things that a straight white man can't say because she's a victim. You know, she's a lesbian. It would have been such a good thing for British politics. She's pro Donald Trump. She's been on Red Ice Radio and talked to them. She's, as you've said, she's sympathetic to National Action and the Scottish Dawn. She would have been such a breath of fresh air and such a good thing for us. And it's just such a shame that we are not more organized and that we didn't get this done. It's a real missed opportunity.
Just our listeners, just the listeners to SS Britannia could have swung the vote. We really do have to start thinking tactically. I think, it's all well and good criticizing people because they don't, you know, they don't conform entirely to our ideals, but if they've got a chance of leading a mainstream party, we should all get behind them. We should have done everything we could to help her get in there. I mean, I tell you, as a personal defeat, really, that I didn't, you know, harp on about it more. I mean, I've mentioned it a few times in the podcast that she's standing for leadership and it would be really good if she gets in, but we didn't make it a major theme. And I think we should have done, and we should have got other people too as well. It's not a positive thing at all to have lost her. It's an embarrassment. That's the word I'm looking for. A shame, really. We should feel ashamed of ourselves for not doing more to help her. We did have some good news last week, though. We had Alternative for Deutschland. They got voted in. That's fantastic news. Really good news. 12% of the vote. They're now the third largest party in Germany. And I did talk about that. I did a whole podcast devoted to that, the Daily Traditionalists. But I'm sure you probably would like to have a few words to say on that, Brutus, on AfD's major win that they had in Germany.
Yeah, I mean, it's good news. I don't have too much to say. I mean, they voted for Merkel again. I mean, it's kind of... I don't know, back in 2015, when she invited all those Muslims in, I thought, well, at least they'll never vote for her again. You know, at least they've boiled the water too fast and she'll get kicked out, but she's back in. So it's, yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely good news. It's definitely a step in the right direction. Definitely the people in the mass media seem to be upset and disturbed by it. It's all calling it the rise of Nazis. What I did think was interesting was that there was like a twin leadership of this party, but the females dropped out. So now it's just a man in charge. So that is definitely a step in the right direction. It seems that the more radical element of the party is controlling the party now. And this lady, she quit because she was a little bit disturbed by some of the racism in the party. So good signs for the future, I hope.
Definitely. Very, very positive that Frau Kapetra has left. I thought she was quite good, but apparently, yeah, she's left because the rest of the party seemed too hardcore for her taste. So, yeah, we'll just have to see what happens there.
Back to the kitchen.
Yeah. And my favourite resistance group, a nationalist organization, the Nordic Resistance Movement in Sweden, the most impressive out of all our nationalist organizations in Europe, I think. They had a huge demonstration on Saturday in Gothenburg, and predictably the same thing happened that happened in Charlottesville, and that happens everywhere whenever we try to hold a demonstration. The Antifa were there, and they were forced to come into contact with the Antifa. And apparently there was a scuffle, and after this scuffle, they shut the whole protest down. They stopped the Nordic Resistance Movement marching any further. A police officer was wounded. You can see it on the video. I mean, he's crying like a baby. And the way that the police responded to this was absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I've never... You know, to see a completely innocent man being beaten up by the police. They went for the drummer. Now, the guy's got a huge bass drum that he's got attached around his waist. If you've got a bass drum attached around your waist, then you can hardly reach your arms around it. Yeah, you're certainly not going to be able to attack anyone or defend yourself. You need people to defend you because you're carrying this big thing on your waist. And that's who the police went for. They went for the guy with the drum. And they beat him up. It was horrible to see. It's not very nice to hear this police officer wailing. But to go and take it out on an innocent man like that, I thought was really disgusting. But the Nordic Resistance Movement themselves, they handled themselves very well. I saw some footage from Peter Sweden of them walking to the actual rendezvous point, and they just look so impressive. They've got riot shields, the same as the police ones, these see-through plexiglass. They're all wearing the same jackets with Nordic Resistance Movement on them. They've all got these protective helmets that they've got as well. They just look like almost like a paramilitary force. Really, really impressive, really well-disciplined. I know that they have these activities out in the snow and out in the icy wastes of Sweden. They go on these training camps, these endurance camps that they do, a lot of stuff that we just couldn't do here in Britain. That's why we don't really have a Nordic Resistance Movement in Britain, because we couldn't actually emulate what it is that they do, because it's so specific to these Scandinavian countries. But they're a really, really well-disciplined group. Everything that they do is professional and just top of the range. I mean, if you look at the Nordfront site, you look at the propaganda that they produce, it's all really, really, really top quality stuff. And Sweden are trying to ban them. They're even trying to ban the rune that they use. So they're actually trying to ban a letter of the alphabet to try and stop the Nordic Resistance Movement. The police have called for them to be banned. And the actual police on the day, the police chief, said that they had plans to arrest the entire Nordic Resistance Movement. So again, just like Charlottesville, They wanted to shut the event down. They wanted the slightest excuse to shut the event down, but they also wanted to actually arrest everyone there, which they were not able to do. The march itself was supposed to go past a synagogue. So, of course, the Jews were wailing and shrieking about that, and they got the march diverted past so that it didn't actually go through the synagogue. And they made this big fuss about the fact that it was Yom Kippur, as if Nordic Resistance Movement has specifically chosen that day for their march, which, you know, really sort of says something about the sense of self-importance that these Jews have. But before I talk a bit about Yom Kippur, Brutus, have you got any thoughts on this Nordic Resistance Movement march that they had on Saturday?
Yeah, I didn't really follow it, but they are definitely a very smart group of people, and everybody says that their dress sense and their style and their presentation is very, very good. Unfortunately, yeah, you're right. It does seem that the police, they're basically our enemies. And I'm not really sure what type of rhetoric we should take on this. I mean, the Antifa already, you know, say F the pigs and all this kind of, you know, they hate the police. And we on the right wing, we've always seemed to try to snuggle up and make friends with the police and I don't know, kind of lie to ourselves and try to convince ourselves that they're really on our side. But it doesn't look like they are at all. So I'm unsure how we should proceed about this. But no, I will say, you know, in regard to Charlottesville, just before the show, I was scrolling through Twitter and somebody was mentioning that, what was he talking about? He was talking about a town in Kentucky called Bettysburg, or something like this. Anyway, some small little town in Kentucky, white town, 81% of the population voted for Donald Trump. And you got like, you know, 20% of them are on food stamps. It's basically a poor white town, right? But a big town out in the middle of Kentucky somewhere. And the guy was making the point, you know, instead of going out into a place like Charlottesville to fight with blacks and Antifa and, you know, going into the heart of the enemy to start a huge punch up, why not hold a rally in somewhere which is perhaps a little bit more friendly, where the you know, the Joe public might actually rally around you? And I think that's a great idea. And I think that's definitely perhaps what we should do. I mean, I know the Charlottesville thing was about the statue, so that I can understand why they did it as a rallying point. But, I mean, I watched Richard Spencer last week. I think it was just this last week. They did a little rally or a little demonstration in Washington. Spencer was there. Mike Enoch was there. And it was against DACA. And it was kind of like a hit and run rally. And it was kind of good because it came off peacefully, but it looked kind of weak, to be honest with you, especially post Charlottesville. And I think what we need is another demonstration of strength in America. And we need a Charlottesville that doesn't turn into a riot. And perhaps we need to go to one of these, you know, predominantly white, predominantly poor white Republican towns and show these poor white Americans that somebody actually cares about them. Perhaps that would be a good idea. And I don't know the situation in Sweden and where they were protesting or whatever. I don't know about the demographics in Sweden. Perhaps they might consider doing a similar thing. But yeah, police are definitely not on our side.
Well, it was a definite show of strength in Sweden. I mean, 600 people from the Nordic Resistance Movement. And yeah, that was a really impressive show of strength, and the police would not have been able, I think they would not have been able to arrest them all if they tried. They'd have had a real fight on their hands. They're lucky that they didn't. But you make a good point there about going to all white towns and demonstrating, and that's what the traditionalist worker party do. Earlier in the year, I think it was about May time, they did a demonstration in a town and went off peacefully, and they outnumbered all the Antifa, and that was the point of it, was the fact that it was a majority white town, and they wanted the townsfolk there to know that they were standing up for them, that the nationalist movement was standing up for the white working class. It was the Nationalist Front that actually put that on. So it was the Traditionalist Worker Party, the National Socialist Movement of America, and various other groups that Matt Heimbach involved with. So these things do go on, and they are successful, and you don't get the big fights that we saw at Charlottesville. So that, you know, that's a good point that you make there, Brutus. With this Yom Kippur, which has been this weekend, where the demonstration took place on the day of Yom Kippur. This is a rather interesting Jewish festival. Some of our listeners are probably aware of it. I mentioned it to you earlier, and I don't think you'd heard much about it. But there's two important things about this Yom Kippur that the Jews do. On the night before Yom Kippur, they have a ritual called Kapparot or Kapparo. And if you look at the Wikipedia page for this, it's all very nice. And it says that the Jews say a prayer over a chicken, and then they give a chicken to the homeless. It's a charitable act. But what's really going on is these Jews get a chicken, they whirl it around their head three times, and then they project all their sins onto this chicken, which they then give to a homeless person. Unsuspecting homeless person then eats the chicken, and when he eats the chicken, he takes on all the sins that Jew has committed for that year. I mean, it's pretty barbaric ritual to be doing stuff with animals anyway, but the idea behind it is to just give all your sins to someone worse off than you and make it look like it's an act of charity, as if you're doing something kind for that homeless person. So if any Jews ever offer you a chicken, turn them down. This is what they do on the eve of Yom Kippur. And then on the actual day itself, they have what's known as the Kol Nida prayer, which again, they'll try and say that this is all completely innocent and it's asking for forgiveness of sins, but it's actually asking for forgiveness of future sins. It's a prayer that they do where they say, let all my vows and oaths for the next year not actually have to stand for anything. So it's basically saying, let me lie for the next year and then don't punish me. And this is their Kol Nida vow. And because of this prayer that they do, this Kol Nida prayer, in some countries, Jews were forbidden from actually being witnesses or taking part in court because it was known that they had offered up this prayer basically stating that they were going to lie in the next year. For the next year, it's perfectly fine for them to break every oath, every vow that they make to God, and God will not punish them for it because they've said this prayer beforehand. And yet the Jews have the gall to claim that this Yom Kippur is a sanctified and holy day, and none of these Gentiles must walk past their synagogue on this day. And yet both of the rituals involved in it are about scamming somebody else, ripping somebody else off, giving somebody else all your sins and being absolved of all your sins for the following year. I mean, in Christianity, you ask for forgiveness of sins. You don't ask for forgiveness so that you can then go out and commit more sins. It's, when you look into these Jewish festivals, I mean, there's another one where they eat people's ears and celebrate the death of thousands of Gentiles. But this is a particularly interesting one, this Yom Kippur. Have you heard of it before, Brutus?
No, I haven't. But it does remind me of the concept of the scapegoat, which is in the Bible as far as I remember it, but it always struck me that the white man is the scapegoat for the Jews, because basically, you know, they take over the government, they start a whole bunch of wars, they blow people up, they poison everything, they rob, they steal, they act in a terrible way, and then who gets the blame for it? The white man, you know? It's like, and then you get all these white people hating white people because they see, you know, all the savagery and the nastiness that's coming out of America and that's coming out of the British government. And, you know, in actual fact, this is not us. This is this alien force which has taken over us and is controlling our nations from within. And, you know, it's the Zog. It's the Zog that's to blame, not for us. But the Jews are really smart, and they sidestep the blame and they give us the blame. So, yeah, I understand the concept. I mean, I also understand the concept. It is very much an idea which is in Vedic culture, in that when you give charity, you are giving your karma, in a way, to the person that is receiving your charity. This is why there are really kind of strict rules about receiving charity, and you have to be careful with it. I mean, the idea is that if anybody gives you charity, first of all, you know, you should offer it to God before taking it yourself, or offer it to the guru before taking it yourself. Because if you go out, if you're a monk, say, for example, in India, and you go out begging, people give you different types of charity. You're taking on all their sins, and sometimes you can't digest it, and you end up being more lusty than you were before. This is something which I had really driven into me over and over again. And it's really a very strong feature in Vedic culture. For example, like a lot of the monks, here's a good example. A lot of the monks, you're practicing celibacy, they don't like it. They won't let a woman cook for them because, you know, a woman's lust goes into the food, and then the man eats it and he becomes lusty. So yeah, I can understand. Yeah, they kind of, I don't know, these two ideas are connected, that you kind of give charity and it kind of, you're giving your sins to somebody else. So I understand what they're doing. Kind of, I'm hesitating to say the word spiritual, but you know what I mean, on a psychic level or whatever.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. The escape goat, Azazel, I think it was called, the escape goat in the Old Testament, I mean, that's slightly different. What they would do is they would put all their sins onto this goat when they were in the wilderness, and then they would set the goat free. And the goat would be freed then. It wasn't like that they were putting all their sins onto the goat and then tricking some unsuspecting person into eating the goat. It was marked out and it was set free. And that's the idea of the escape goat, this tradition that they actually had. So, you know, you can see that it's quite different from what the Jews are doing today by giving this chicken to people. Now, when you were talking there about the charity and the charity passing on sins, I mean, would that include, say, where the money had come from? If someone was giving charity to somebody and that was money that they'd robbed from somewhere, and that's why they were giving it away in charity, or is it something different that you were talking about?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I lived in India in a temple, and they would say never take charity from a Muslim, never take charity from, I don't know, someone who owns an alcohol shop or whatever, or a slaughterhouse or whatever. Don't take money from these people. That would be the general concept, because you're taking money, or you're accepting charity from these people. You're taking a little bit of their sin as well, and sometimes you can digest it, and sometimes you can't. So yeah, this concept is there. Yeah.
So it's, you're taking part in their ill-gotten gains, I guess.
You're taking their karma. I mean, this is a real central point why I've always worked a job and I don't take money off the government, because you're taking money off the government, you're taking all the sins of the government. And I know a lot of, this is a real point of contention for me in the Hare Krishna movement, because there are so many devotees who live on the dole and they lie to themselves and they say, oh, I'm doing it for my spiritual life. And they just end up lazy and crazy, you know, because what happens is if you go on the dole and you're taking charity from the government, you're taking this money from the government, you're taking all of the sins from the government, it's coming down on your head. And I've seen these people. I know what they're like. They end up lazy. They end up crazy. Some people can digest it. Some people are very, very strong and they can overcome that kind of, sin, but it's much better to work for yourself and make money for yourself, and to stay away from that kind of charity. Definitely. Yeah, it's just, yeah, the concept is, if you work hard and you've made money, you've made something of worth, and you give that to somebody, you're giving some of your karma to that person, and you're getting something in return. You're like taking some of their energy. I mean, that's why you go to the temple and you give money to God, because you're taking some of their energy in return. So if you're a holy person and you're receiving a lot of charity from people, then you're, at the same time, you're giving away a lot of your energy to the people. They're kind of like almost buying your spiritual energy of people. This is why it's such a powerful thing to give charity. This is why there are so many stories in the Vedic Shastras saying again and again and again why it's such an important thing to give charity, because it makes you strong. I mean, there's a famous story of a demon. His name's Bali Maharaj, and he just sits and he gives charity all day long, and he becomes very powerful. He ends up conquering heaven because the gods in heaven are lazy. And there's many, many, many other stories like that. Giving charity is a very powerful thing because you give away all your sins, you give away all your bad karma, you get rid of, you know, you unburden yourself of all these things. And in turn, more things will come to you, and you get this flow of like this gift economy going, and you become stronger and stronger and stronger. And at the same time, if you are a monk, if you're trying to practice celibacy, if you're trying to dedicate yourself to God, you really have to try to learn to survive on very, very, very little. And you have to stay away from rich people, because they're just going to give you lots and lots of nice stuff, and they're going to drag you down, and they're going to drag your consciousness down into a material level. This is why the really strong renunciates in ancient India, they would live under a tree. And just, I mean, a famous example would be Raghunath Das Goswami. He would go around, he would beg buttermilk, which is kind of like, you know, when you make yogurt, there's a bit left over. That's called buttermilk. Anyway, he would drink that, and that's all he would take. He wouldn't take any other charity because it would be considered something that would contaminate his consciousness. So, it's a strong theme in Vedic culture.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way of looking at it. I hadn't thought about it like that before. But back to the theme of police violence. Also, on Sunday, which is when we're actually recording this, we've got the Catalonia elections. Democracy in action. Democracy is happening right in front of our very eyes in Spain, with windows being smashed in, police hitting people with truncheons, people that are basically just trying to express their will to vote, their will for independence, and they're being shut down. And we're being told this is perfectly right, this is perfectly legal. They don't have a right to have a referendum. And yet when you contrast that with Crimea, where you had a completely peaceful referendum, no police crackdown, 99% of the country voted for reunification with Russia, and we're told that was a Russian invasion, that was a Russian land grab, that was them invading the Crimea.
Didn't Hitler invade Austria as well in the same way? Just...
Yeah, I think what happened there, the troops from Austria went across the bridge into Germany, and the troops from Germany went across the bridge into Austria. And it was all planned out very early in the morning. I think they left at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was all a sort of spur of the moment thing. That was the Blumenkrieg, the War of the Roses. And it's one of the most moving sights you can actually see is the cinematography of that, with all these people on the square with Hitler in the window and all these flowers being thrown, people climbing up high on lampposts and on statues, just thousands and thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people. Very, very, very moving. Any of our listeners that haven't seen that yet should check that out, the Blumenkrieg. I think there's shots from that in Dennis's Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I think that's where I first saw that. So it's quite a contrast to the Blumenkrieg, the Catalonia police violence, head cracking, and everything else that's going on there. Have you been following this Catalonian independence, Brutus?
Well, I haven't been following it closely, but I do support it, and I always have supported separatism, even in the UK. Funny enough, I do love Britain, and I love Scotland, and I love Wales, but the thing is this, that we live in a cultural Marxist world, and in a cultural Marxist world, everything is about being a victim. And so the Welsh and the Scottish and the Catalonians, they have a victim narrative in that they're being oppressed, like the Welsh and the English are being oppressed. The Welsh and the Scottish, sorry, are being oppressed by the English. The Catalonians are being oppressed by the Spanish. So it's kind of a way where you are, it's an example where you are allowed to be nationalistic, essentially. It's not explicit white nationalism, but it is implicit in a way. You're waving the flag of your nation, and you're able to do it because you're a victim. So I support separatism for that. And I support it because anything that stirs the pot and anything that is, you know, helps to break up the European Union. I don't know what Catalonia's stance on the European Union is. I assume that it's a cucked stance. A lot of people in the alt-right were making fun of Catalonia, saying that these are just stupid liberals. They love refugees, that it's not really this, it's not really that. Yes, I totally agree. I'm totally aware of that. But it's a step in the right direction. I mean, it's kind of like, I was reading some guy who was writing about it, he was boohooing it, and then he was saying, oh yeah, and Brexit was just the same, and it's just the whole nothing. And it's like, no, this is political energy. This is political energy which is heading in the right direction. It is a form of civic nationalism. It's, you've got thousands and thousands of people out in the streets waving their flag and getting fired up about their political goals and in a civic nationalist way. And it's fantastic. And so I 100% support it. And obviously the Spanish government's going to crack down on them and give them a hard time. And that's just going to radicalize them even further. So I think the situation is very beneficial for us, I think.
Yeah, it seems like they're in keeping with the other semi-nationalist movements. I mean, you brought up Wales there and Scotland, but Wales, Scotland and Ireland are all extremely pro-multiculturalism. They're just against England. I mean, if Plaid Cymru were ever to take control of Wales, they would open up all the borders. They've already said that they want to allow every refugee to come to Wales that wants to. You've got the same in Scotland with the SNP. They said that they want a separate agreement with the EU so that they can open the borders and allow everybody in. Sinn Féin, they're exactly the same. In Ireland, they want to open the borders and allow everybody in. So it wouldn't surprise me if in Catalonia they are exactly the same. And rather than wishing for protection for the country, they probably want to flood it with even more refugees. So that is a shame, but that is what I would expect from them. And it's not an ethnically based movement at all. It is a movement that wants sovereignty for the country rather than for a specific ethnicity. But the fact that they've managed to get enough of them together to persuade the authorities to go along with them, that's a really good sign. And as far as from what I can make out, a few years back, somebody that was in authority there tried to do something similar and he was locked up. And what's happened now is they've got somebody else, either the Lord Mayors or the people that are supposed to be this proxy government for Spain, have set up this referendum. They've been told you can't do that, but they've set it up anyway. And they've set up the referendum posts and people are getting out there and voting. And that is really encouraging, the fact that the authorities have sided with the people there against the overarching authority of Spain. So that's the encouraging thing that I see from Catalonia.
More thing I wanted to say, you know, in regard to Scotland and to Wales and to Catalonia all being in favor of refugees, I mean, I'm sure the leaders of those movements are pro-refugee, but I doubt the, you know, the Welsh that vote for Plaid Cymru or the Scottish that vote for the SNP, I doubt that they actually really want refugees. I don't think the followers want it. This is just something which the, you know, the leaders, they throw in there. So I think the spirit of the movement is probably kind of more implicitly white and probably more, you know, implicitly Scottish or Welsh or Catalonian. It's just that the leaders are mixing this immigrant thing in with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. You got a couple of white pills to throw in there? We've got 5 minutes to go, 5-6 minutes to go that you wanted to talk about so we can leave our listeners feeling happy and cheerful rather than feeling depressed at the loss with UKIP and the march not going ahead in Gothenburg?
Well, I got three white pills. Three white pills in a row.
Right.
White pill number White pill number one, Andrew Joyce is bashing the gays on altright.com. He's written a very long essay. Well, three essays. Go and check it out. He's basically banging on saying, why do we have all these gays in the white nationalist movement? Nobody wants them here. They're subversive. It's the Jews that promote homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the same kind of talking points that me and you talk about, Sven. So it's good to see, you know, one of these old academic types coming out and pushing that forward. But that's really just a minor white pill. The big two white pills, which everybody's talking about this week, are Roy Moore getting elected in Alabama and the NFL Kneelgate thing. And first of all, Roy Moore, he's just been elected senator of Alabama. He ran against a guy called Strange. Trump supported Strange, but Strange is just some neocon hack. Nobody liked him. But Trump supported him, and he had, you know, obviously millions and millions of dollars for his campaign. But Roy Moore ran against him. Steve Bannon supported Roy Moore, and Roy Moore ran on a basic, you know, Trumpist platform of anti-immigration, also anti-gay, because he's a Christian. And Roy Moore won. So this is absolutely fantastic news. Why? Because we're all looking forward to the 2018 elections, and we're looking forward to hopefully bumping off a lot of this dead weight from the Republican Party and getting rid of, you know, all these conservatives that are messing up the swamp. I mean, they are the swamp. Trump said he wanted to drain the swamp, and he's kind of got stuck in the swamp, unfortunately. But Trumpism, as an idea, is still alive and well. And this guy, he stood up and he got elected with no money, with no nothing, no media backing, no nothing. He was even against Trump, you know, and he got elected on a Trumpist platform. So it's an amazing white pill and a sign of things to come next year, hopefully. And the other white pill, which is the biggest white pill of them all, is the NFL. It's the Kneelgate. It's, black football players kneeling to the national anthem in America. And these, basically the left has overreached, and the left is declaring that, the American flag is a symbol of white supremacy. And they're saying, we're not Americans. We're not real Americans. And that real Americans are white people, and they're racist and they're horrible. I mean, this is exactly the kind of position we want to be. I don't know what these Jews think they're doing. I really don't know what they think they're doing. They've just, they're doing all our hard work for us. I mean, they're pushing racial identity. White people don't even want to think about it. I mean, all these old baby boomers that watch football, they just want to drink a few beers and watch the football match. And all of a sudden you've got all these black people kneeling down for the flag, telling and talking about how they hate white people, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we're seeing now in America is the awakening of the baby boomer, the white baby boomer. It's kind of like one author, one alt-right guy, he described it as, Gamergate for the baby boomers, you know, because obviously Gamergate woke up a lot of people, a lot of young millennials sitting at home playing video games all day long. They just want to be left alone, but these flipping social justice warriors, they've got to mess up their video games. They get angry about it and they end up getting red-pilled and they end up joining the alt-right. Well, it's the same thing now for the baby boomers. These people, they just... Somebody wrote a really good piece about this on altright.com about, you know, you have to understand the nature of the normie, the average American. The average American white guy and white woman, they just want to be left alone. That's all they want. They just want to be left alone. They just want a job and a simple little family, and they want to come home and drink a beer and watch TV. That's all they want. But they just, the Jews won't even let them do it. They've got to mess up their football game. They've got to mess up their movies. They've got to mess up their video games. They've just got to keep prodding them and prodding them and prodding them until they get angry and start fighting back, you know? And that's what's happening all over America now. People are burning their shirts. They're burning their season tickets. And Trump is pushing them on. Trump's telling these blacks, he's saying, you know, you've got to stand up for the national anthem. And obviously, because he's telling them to do it, they're not going to do it. So he's just egging the whole thing on. A lot of people are saying it's the most significant thing that Trump has done since he's been elected. And I think I agree. It's a huge, huge cultural shift. It's really great. It's a massive white pill. Because basically what it means is the left is now saying the American flag is a white supremacist symbol. I mean, how fantastic is that?
That's excellent. That's really good to hear. Polarization is continuing there. And, you know, it's quite encouraging to hear, I guess, that the people supported Steve Bannon's choice rather than Donald Trump's choice in the election. I wouldn't have expected that either. So, yeah, and I saw the alt-right articles and I thought that was fantastic. Yeah, really, really good. Andrew Joyce is a fantastic writer. A lot of information in that I was unaware of. And you definitely put a really good argument across. It was just spoiled somewhat by an anti-Christian podcast that they did over at Alt-Right. I've never seen anyone misjudge their readers and their listeners so much as they appeared to do with that podcast. So about 99% of the comments were saying, what the hell are you playing at? Why are you attacking us Christians? So they did kind of take one step forward and two steps back. But yeah, it's great to see them finally taking a stand against sodomy. And it was really good to see that it was put across in such a cogent and clever way by Andrew Joyce. A fantastic series of three articles, and I do recommend all our listeners go and read them if they haven't already. Anyway, Brutus, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do have a Bitcoin wallet, and we do need donations to keep the radio station going. And you can also buy Morgoth a beer on his Patreon or on his Patreon. We'll be back next Monday with more SS Britannia for you, and we do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
Alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.